Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Dear Love Joy podcast. It's another special. Today's guest is Sarah Beeney. She doesn't need an introduction, does she? She does all stuff on property. Let's meet her. You're in my kitchen. Hello, Sarah Beeney.
Hi, hello, how are you?
First thing is I've got to give you a present. I give everyone a present. And I got you a book.
Oh, brilliant.
Because it amused me that I'd get you this book. It's The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying by Marie Kondo. And I got this book because it was life-changing in my house. And as you're all about property, do you know about this book?
No, I don't. I'm going to get my glasses.
All right, let me pass that over to you. This book is, this woman has made an absolute fortune out of teaching people how to tidy their houses up.
It's just really annoying. I shouldn't find it annoying. I'm really jealous because I could have written a book on how to tidy. The big problem is tidying, not knowing how to tidy.
Well,
it?
No, because it's all her techniques. It's one of those books that I read about in a magazine. I picked it up a few years ago, read it. I give it to a lot of people now, and it is life-changing. And if you look at my kitchen, which is quite new,
It's immaculate.
I got it done a few years ago, and the interior architect kept saying, you need more storage. I said, if you give me more storage, I'll find more stuff to put in it. Don't give me storage. So now I've got enough here, haven't I? But it's limited storage really in a way. And the idea is that if you don't have storage, you can't have anything.
I do agree with that. I do think the more storage you have, the more you put in it. And then the worst is big storage. So my slight theory is I don't know if this is what is said in the book, but thank you very much for the book. I shall read it.
All right.
But I think the key is lots of little storage, because if you have big storage, so if you have a huge cupboard, you'll just stuff it all in, and then when you need something, you'll just go and buy it again because you don't know where it is. So the key is it's about order, really, kind of really pedantic order.
Her theory is that everything needs a home, and if it's got a home, then you just put it back where it lives.
That's absolutely perfect, assuming you live on your own, though. If you live with lots of people who don't, I spend all my time saying, why is the sellotape not on the sellotape shelf? And that's because someone wanted the sellotape, but they didn't need to put it back on the sellotape shelf.
Yeah.
See, that is the lack of
order. You've got about 30 children, haven't you? So every time I see you, you're pregnant. So
that is true. That is. Yeah, I'm fighting a losing battle. And I blame them. Actually, I blame their parents. Yeah. Oh, hang on, that's me.
How many children do you have now?
Well, only four.
Only four.
I mean, it's hardly only any. Four. Mind you, you've got three.
I've got three, yeah. I always used to say to you, you're going to end up living in a shoe because you've got so many children and big shoes on.
I used to want six, but fortunately my husband stopped me at four. And I'm very lucky, actually, because at the time I thought he was being really dull. But now I realise children are quite easy when they're babies, don't you think? Like small babies.
How old's your oldest now?
He's 13.
Yeah, mine are 15 going and just about to hit 16, and it's horrific. I mean, I'll show you later upstairs, but their rooms, I've just given up on it. I don't know what else to do.
So don't you want to give them this book, though?
I have tried. I actually did organise all their things like the book says, and they didn't. It lasted about 2 weeks before they decided they didn't want it like that. So
yeah, it's very difficult to persuade other people. Although I did have this discussion with my children when they said, "What's the point in making our bed?" So one of our battles, it's quite a small battle, but I haven't won it, so I haven't moved on to the other battles. Quite a small battle is why you should make your bed in the morning, and I say it's about general order, knowing where your stuff is. You need to make your bed and then tidy up your floor and turn the light out and open the curtains. It's not a lot I'm asking for the morning. But they always say, well, why would you make your bed? Because you're going to get in it tonight. So what's the point?
It's good logic.
It is. And
though the reason why I bought that book in the first place is I listened to a lot of self-help. I read a lot of self-help books. That's why I do this podcast. And they often say start by just tidying stuff. If you get your home in order, which is what you've just said there. So I was listening to someone the other day talking, when you meet students and they're feeling down, says start by just tidying your bedroom. You have a tidy bedroom, the whole of your world changes. And it is true, it makes you feel better when you wake up and your house is nice.
You know, that is true. And but I don't know if you can really understand that until you're older. I always think if you've lost something, the first thing you should do is tidy up, which my children looked blankly and they said, why would I tidy up? I've lost something, I'm looking for it. And they say, well, if you tidy up everywhere, you'll come across that and all the other things you've lost, and then and you'll have it all tidy, so then you'll be able to find it. But it's quite difficult to get your head around that when you're looking for one football boot, isn't it? I kind of think tidy up and it'll appear.
So as well as doing my podcast today, we're doing yours as well. You're starting a podcast. Am I the pilot of it, or is it actually going to go out?
Hopefully. Well, I'm hoping it'll be so fabulous it goes out. That's my keeping my fingers crossed.
And what is your podcast about?
Well, it's about why we live, how we live, and how we ended up living there. Because it occurred to me that, you know, we know lots about you, which is great, but we don't know lots of things that are really interesting, because you're, and in a way, I sort of think you are who you are and how you are because of where you've lived and the people around you, obviously.
Right.
But I think we're massively affected by our environment, and that doesn't mean to say it has to be a big house or a small house. It's just about, it's actually smaller than that, and actually it's about, did you tidy your room when you were young?
Yeah,
I think that makes a big difference, and it tells a lot about somebody. So that's really what it's about. It's the minutiae detail of,
oh, so we can repeat the whole of talking about Mary
Kondo's
broken.
Basically, if you could just cut that and just pop it into my podcast, that would be really fantastic.
All right. What have you been doing recently, TV wise? You've had so many TV shows, haven't you? Really?
Yeah. Do you know when I hit 100 property ladders, I did think that is quite a commitment to TV. Actually, I did think, poor viewers, they've got so many hours of me on. They used to put on repeat. I don't know if they still do on various channels. So they'd have a whole weekend of me. I thought that would be tough, wouldn't it? To have to sit through that.
People love property programs.
They do. They do. But I can understand why, actually, because I sort of think people often ask me why are we obsessed with property in this country, which we are. And I think, you know, it starts from a long time ago, because if you didn't own property, you didn't have the vote until actually relatively recently. And so that kind of meant you were not a person if you didn't own property.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you had to be a landowner to be able to vote.
Which is why we're obsessed with owning property,
well,
then.
I think so. Yes. I think that's quite a big reason, because that seems completely outrageous that you could work really hard, but because you didn't own your property, you couldn't vote. So I think it stems from that. But I also think it's partly because it's cold here. And if we lived in, you know, if it was the weather of Greece, I don't suppose people would care so much, would they? Because it'd be outside eating olives and, you know, doing other things that people do. That's, no, is that
nice
what they do?
Generalization of Greek people. Sit outside eating olives.
And fish, I think they eat as well.
Okay.
And swim.
They're good theories. I like those theories. My friends, we spend a lot of time, or they do actually, talking about property. I've lived in this one for quite a long time now. But they, you know, they seem to decorate a room and then get someone in to value it. I mean, it just seems to be obsession with how much their properties are worth constantly.
Yeah, I think this is a sadness, actually, because there is this sort of concept that value of a property is somehow wealth, and of course value of property is all relative, and you know, it's all very well thinking, gosh, my house is gone, you know, maybe you bought a flat, I don't know, when I was young I bought my first flat for £52,000. That doesn't mean to say that it was really cheap, it just means it's many centuries ago, and that was in 1503. I think people think, gosh, you know, that was so amazing, it was so cheap then. But you have to put it relatively to how much people earn. I didn't know anyone who earned double figures. So the best salaries, this is people, university graduates, were on £9,000 a year. And that was like amazing.
Yeah.
So relatively speaking, it wasn't, I mean, £52,000 now would be quite cheap. But now, then it wasn't. So I think you have to put it into context. And also, it's all very well your house now being worth gazillions of pounds. But unless you're prepared to go and live in a, you know, a caravan, or you want to, you know, go and spend it on chocolate, it isn't actual real wealth, because you've got to live somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the sadnesses, this is another big huge conversation which I don't think you want to go into now, but you know, one of the things that Margaret Thatcher did when she was really pushing home ownership is you spend all your life, you buy a home and you spend all your life then paying off your mortgage and end up with, you know, a big lump of capital, which in itself, I think, you know, right to buy and buy to let fuel the housing market to the, to this sort of massive expansion that it has done where it is today.
Yeah.
But then you get to the end of your life, and of course, because now everyone's disparate and they live all over the country, you then have to sell your house to pay for the care for you to survive through old age. And there is no option with that. So actually there's something kind of sad about it in a way, because you have this concept of home ownership, but they'll have it back at the end anyway. And if they don't, have it in death duties anyway. So I kind of think it's, I don't know. I think you have to live in, you have to live for today and live in today. So constantly looking at the value of your home, I think, is probably a mistake, unless you're going to sell it.
And the other thing people do, I mean, this is a very London thing I'm talking about here, but a lot of, often people look at how much they're getting for their money, which is nothing in London. So they move out. Mm. And their standard of living, or their way they live, changes dramatically. I've got three cases I know where it's ended in divorce.
It's cheery.
it kind of that way, you know, the move to the country thing. It's like, yeah, look, we get a much bigger house, we get a land, but then they also have a different style of living. They don't have the coffee shop at the end of their road or 24-hour supermarkets or whatever. You know, they have to get in a car every time they want to do something. It's a different way of living. Not saying that's a bad way of living. It's a different way of living. And I think people need to realize that they've got to work out the way they want to live is important.
Definitely. I would agree with that completely, because actually a home is just a tool for living in. It doesn't exist independently to people. In fact, if you leave a home alone and no people go to it, within 50 years it will be back. Nature will take it back, which is fascinating to me. Especially in the countryside, we've got more trees and leaves.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a child, there was a house in a wood that I used to. I had a pony to go and see my friends. I wasn't very good on the pony, but that was the.
It's, you know, pretty cool to have a pony.
There wasn't any other way of getting there. And she lived about 5 miles away. So when I look back, I think, God, it was quite health and safety free. But anyway, so she lived on the farm.
So you went to see your friend, not on a bike or walking like the rest of us. You got on a pony.
Yeah, I did. Well, I wasn't really allowed on the bike because the bike went on the road, and my parents were more concerned about me on the road than going through the woods on the pony. So,
right, okay.
Which kind of makes sense in a sort of 1970s way, doesn't it?
I suppose so, yeah.
Ish. Yeah. It was quite a lazy pony. It wasn't like a, you know, show jumper or anything.
All right. So,
and it used to eat all my Marmite sandwiches. And I don't think it was. It was more like a sort of Thelwell pony rather than a sports pony. Anyway, so, but I remember going through these woods, and there was a house that was, when I was, I guess, probably 5 or 6, it was a really nice house. I remember thinking, God, I love that house. It was sort of a 5-bedroom house in a wood. And then I went back there probably 15, 20 years later, and I was sure it was there, and I looked around the wood and couldn't find it. And then I found a foot off the ground. There was sort of some tiny little walls covered in leaves, and nature had taken the building back. So it was derelict-ish when I was, well, the roof had started to cave in when I was 5, and 20 years later. And that just shows that actually nature reclaims buildings. It made me feel quite humble, actually, looking at it, because I thought, you know, we think we're so powerful as humans, but if you leave the roads alone and you leave the buildings alone, if we all disappeared, it would end up back in a jungle before you know it.
The other interesting thing about properties is we become obsessed with them. And then on our deathbeds, or when we end up in a home or in the hospice or wherever we are, no one ever goes, I had a really lovely house. They only talk about relationships. And we spend the whole of our life. You don't go, God, do you know, once I had a Ferrari for a year. Yeah, you know, no one cares.
No.
That material things. You know, and I'd say that I've not been there, but I've read masses on this, and people who work in hospices. All you're going to discuss when you're on your deathbed is what relationships you had with your family and your friends and your animals.
But yeah.
Not a lot else.
Yeah, do you know, someone said to me the other day, which was really funny. They said, you know, you have a reputation in the industry, which is not great. And I said, oh, God, that's a shame. And they said, we were going to use you for something, but we didn't because of your reputation. I said, oh, what's that then? They said, well, the reputation is that you always put your kids first, and you don't like to work at weekends, and you won't do overnights, and you don't like working in the holidays that much, and you take your kids to work. And I went, yeah. And they went, yeah, and that's why, you know, that's not great. And I went, do you know what? That is such a compliment.
That's yeah, so brilliant. That's such a lovely thing to hear.
Because I
thought,
do you know, brilliant. I am so glad, because that is probably true. I do put them first. And, you know, there is a balance to it. But you're right. On my deathbed, am I going to go, oh, well, you so know what, brilliant I did that show.
I was a mortgage broker for a while. In a previous life, I did that. And I remember you used to sit with, I hated it, by the way. That's why I ended up working in TV and stuff. I couldn't stand it. Not that it's a bad job. I just was rubbish at it. It's a really big commitment for people. And I struggled with the idea that I was trying to sort of help them, but also sort of sell stuff as well. And I was nervous about the whole thing. I'd sit down with young couples and we'd do that calculation of how much do you want. And it was three times their earning, or sometimes in those days they'd go four times your earning plus one or something like that. And you'd sit there and you'd do all their calculations and say, okay, so you've got £5 a week for you left. Yes. I don't think this is a good idea. And they would go, why? We don't need to go out. And I'm like, hold on, you're 21. You've just got married or something. Surely there should be enough money to go out at weekends. You know, you haven't got any kids. Whatever. No, we want the house. And the people were pushing themselves so much back in the days because it was so important to get on the property ladder that they would do it, you know, and sacrifice living basically to do it.
Yeah, I do. I think it's a difficult balance because having, you know, it's kind of rich me saying, because I bought a property when I was really young and I was so determined to buy a property. I really wanted to own my own home. And so I was quite driven to do it. But I think, I suppose what I'd say is I actually think the younger you do it, the better. I've met people who you may have sold mortgages to, who ended up in negative equity. And those people I felt really sorry for, because you think, well, I remember one girl, actually, we were filming her and she had bought this property with her boyfriend and they'd split up. They were terribly young, far too young to be buying somewhere together.
Yeah.
I say richly as I did, but anyway. But she was sort of 22 or 23 and they'd really extended themselves, not on a property that needed any work doing to it, but just was fine. And they redecorated it, but it was fine. So it hadn't gone up in any value. It didn't have any, you know, it was just the value that it was. They split up. He'd gone off and the value of the property had dipped and she couldn't buy him out because if she bought him out it would be at more, so she was in negative equity with a partner she didn't want to be with, in a property that she didn't want to live in because it only had one bedroom and she could hardly rent the other half of the bed out to someone else. So in this really difficult situation, so I do think it isn't for the faint-hearted and you do need to be aware of what you're taking on. However, I do think if you buy a property when you're young, you're prepared to compromise more. So my first flat, it had an outside loo, no indoor bathroom, no kitchen. It was completely
in different. Greece, were you eating olives?
Well, it's funny you should say that. It was in Battersea. But if it was in Greece, I'd have never put an indoor bathroom in. Yeah. I just left it like that. But yeah, it was sort of really basic. And I think you're prepared to compromise more. Whereas when you're older, I think if you wait to buy somewhere when you're older now, I sort of think, well, I'd need to be near the tube. I want a coffee shop. I want to be near my friends. Mm. And then I'm less prepared to compromise.
All right, we'll go back to talking about property and investments and stuff a bit later. But you just arrived on our TVs one day talking about property. What was the process of you getting there? You talked about buying a property early. How did you get involved in the property world?
The property world sort of, I think from a really early age, my dad built our home when I was really young. And so I kind of was aware and around it. He sold our, my mum died when I was 10. So and then he sold our house and then we moved into a caravan and then he built a new house while we lived in the caravan. So when you're living in a caravan around a building site, I mean, it's amazing because as an adult, you think, oh, that's very difficult for a child. Actually, it's not. It's a brilliant adventure for a child, to be honest. So I think that's the other thing we underestimate, is that children like that sort of thing. They actually like to be around things that are interesting. So I saw the house being built and that was kind of fascinating to me because I could see how you could, how the process of construction worked. But I also was really keen on the concept of home and why we call a home and what makes a home. Because you'd go to different people's, you know, as a teenager, I'd go to people's houses and they'd be different. But I'm kind of interested in the difference, whether it's the people inside that make it different. Is it the person who has a perfect house or is it the person who makes you feel most at home that has the nicest house? Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, how do you think I'm doing?
It's beautiful, your house. Actually,
is it a home?
It is a home, I think.
Yeah.
But I haven't walked in here and thought, I like you more because your home is beautiful.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think anyone does. Mm. And I think we make our homes beautiful, and this is beautiful, but I actually don't think other people mind that much.
Mm.
And I think it matters to ourselves more than anyone else.
Yeah.
I think we judge ourselves more than other people judge us, which is kind of fascinating.
But how did you end up getting onto the... Because you ended up becoming a property developer before you got discovered by TV, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I started... I always wanted to work for myself. I didn't want to... I don't like being told what to do, and I didn't want to dread Sundays and think, oh God, it's Monday again. I wanted to have a job where I thought, oh damn, it's Friday, it's 2 days before I can do some more of what I'm doing, because it always occurred to me that it was really mad to have a job where you hated 5 days and liked 2 days, because that's the wrong ratio, isn't it? Really, that doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So being sort of quite demanding, and as a child I really genuinely thought I could have whatever I wanted, so I thought, well, that's what I'll have, and that's the career I'm going to have. So I suppose I had the advantage of being quite driven, and so we bought a flat. That was our first flat, which was 52,000, and that was my brother and my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, and we did it up. And we sold it for a bit of a profit. And then we carried on doing that for a bit. And then I think really after a year or so, we realized that we really wanted to do this. I knew at the time it was going to be a career, but I wasn't quite sure how to get there. And then it became clear that you just work really hard and that's how you get there. So I did have jobs. I had worked in a pub in the evening because I didn't want to spend any of the money that we made.
I've got a list of jobs you did. I got it off Wikipedia.
Did you?
Yeah. You were, you wanted to be an actor.
In my day it was an actress, but now you can't say that.
Can't say that. That's not PC. You were a window cleaner.
Yeah, that was a business that I started, which wasn't brilliant, I must admit. It's quite rubbish, that one.
How long did it go for? A couple of weeks?
No, it was really unfortunate, that, because I did it with a friend, and I discovered once we started, I had an old van, an old Simca van, which was a local council van that my dad said, right, for your 18th, I'll give you £1,000 to buy a car.
Yeah.
And I really wanted a motorhome, but I couldn't afford one, so I got a van. And then I cleaned it all out and put like carpet in the back and cushions, so sort of made my own motorhome. And then it had a roof rack that was like welded onto the top, so I put a ladder on. But the friend that I did this with, she was scared of heights. So that didn't... It wasn't really brilliant because she just stood at the bottom and I cleaned all the
windows. Did all the cleaning.
Yeah. So it wasn't really... the economy of scale was not brilliant.
You did door-to-door vacuum sales.
Ah, yes.
Did you clean up?
Yes.
Sorry about that. But
brilliant.
No.
Yeah.
Did you do that, really?
I did do that. And actually...
Did you have to go and empty dirt on people's carpets and then vacuum it up?
Yeah.
Did you do that?
Yeah, it's really brilliant. Put a black cloth on it. I could do a demonstration now if you feel, but you put a black cloth. It had this little nozzle that where the bag... Yeah. Fit. So you put the nozzle on, then you put a black cloth over it, and then you vacuum it up, and then you take the cloth and go, da-da, look what I've got out of... Actually, secretly, I don't know if I should say this really, but if you hoover their beds, it's really good because it's really disgusting.
Is it?
Yeah.
People's beds?
People's beds are really gross. So that was a really hot tip, because you'd always make a sale after you hoover someone's bed. But they are really brilliant. Do you know, actually, I went on this weekend course to train to be a vacuum cleaner sales lady.
Yeah.
And I was very, or salesperson rather. And I was, I was amazed because they put me in a hotel and paid for it. I couldn't believe it. I was like 19. I just went, wow, my God, they're paying for me to go to a hotel. This is incredible. It wasn't an amazing hotel, but I still believe in the vacuum cleaners. I still really, they are fantastic. I'm absolutely, totally sold on it still.
What, in a vacuum cleaner or this make?
No, Vorwerk. Vorwerk are the best vacuum cleaners.
Okay.
So,
there's a tip for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Without question.
You owned a sandwich company as well.
Yeah, that again, I didn't sell them. There's a lot of sandwiches left. And my dad went, oh, you know, I don't know if we can all have sandwiches for the rest of our lives for supper. And I was like, yeah, there's like 23 sandwiches. We're all eating. Yeah, it wasn't. They were quite good sandwiches, because I think a sandwich needs to have plenty of mayonnaise to make it nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Although now I'm older, they go a bit, I sort of now, you know when you change as you get older, don't you? Yeah. They're a bit soggy, my old sandwiches.
You're old.
Yeah. Well, that's because they're 20 years old.
So let's go back to the property business then. So you started a property portfolio with your husband and your brother.
Mm.
How many properties did you end up with? Did you end up with quite a lot of them?
Well, we've got a development company and an investment company. So we developed, which is how, after a while of buying and selling, we didn't do other jobs. So we lived off that. And then we had an investment company as well. But so we kind of, it was a rolling feast, and it still is a bit of a rolling feast. Although when I started doing telly, I stopped developing so much. So we just ended up with the investment company. But it's been a kind of, it was an amazing journey. And I think it's a good thing to do when you're young, because when you're young, we took a lot of risks.
Did you?
There was one day, I really remember it actually. God, I love your cat. Isn't that beautiful?
Thank you.
No one else can see the cat. This is with ears only.
She's called Princess Lilac.
She's beautiful.
And she comes down and starts shouting during podcasts always.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, thank you.
So I think, I sort of think, you know, there was one moment where we had a lot of debt and the bank threatened to foreclose on us because we had too many houses running. So we had different sites running and houses running, and the loan structure was actually, it was really scary at the time. The loan structure was really bad. It was in the time where they were centralizing banks. So you had a local bank at the time, and the nice bank manager used to just give me debt when I went in and said, oh, this is the next project, I'd like to have some more money. So he'd say, yeah, that's no problem. He ran them all as overdrafts, and then they merged the banks together. So then there were four or five banks. He was made redundant or retired.
Yeah.
There were four or five banks that were merged together, and they looked at my enormous amounts of huge amounts of overdrafts and went, right, we're shutting all these banks till you pay them, bank accounts till you pay it back. Which of course I couldn't do, because we had four properties on the market and we had three sites running. And I was like, no, that's how it's worked for years. And they went, well, everything's frozen. And that was quite scary, because it was basically because he didn't set it up in the way that the bank wanted it set up. And it worked and it would have been fine. So anyway, slightly hairy. Had to get my solicitor involved.
By the way, amazing. I didn't name her Princess Lila. My children did.
are a liar.
Just thinking you're judging me on that.
I am judging you on your cat's name.
But so you've set up your portfolio. How did you end up getting into TV then?
well, TV, that just totally came out of nowhere. I went to a hen party and someone was talking to me and they said, they were chatting. She was a potter and she said, what do you do? And I said, oh, I've got a property development company. And the next day her sister phoned me and said, I'm looking for people to either be contributors or the front face of this new series for Channel 4. So I kind of, I don't think I'd want to be a contributor, but I don't mind being the front face of it. This is with literally no experience. So I was thinking, looking back, I think, that was quite cocky, actually.
Yeah, I think that's
how
you'd be to get into TV, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
I think you do at that stage have to do that thing where you look back and go, oh, God, I regret that. But you have to have that confidence at some stage to get people to trust you to want to walk in front of a TV camera.
Yeah, do you know, I think you might be right, actually, because I also think it helped because I literally didn't understand what they were talking about when they talked about, Grand Designs, which I'd never watched. I knew about films, but I didn't really know what they were talking about. In terms of, they said it's a feature show. I was like, I don't know what feature show is. So that's anyway. So then they asked me to come and meet them, and I did. And they filmed me in the basement of Talkback Thames at the time, which was on Googe Street in London. Filmed me in the basement. They said, "Oh, pretend that this is a kitchen and say what you do." So I said, "Okay," so I did. Which, to be honest, I didn't really think Property Ladder would actually air for a long time because there was one camera and one sound man and a researcher and a director. And I kind of thought that's what a student film would be made, how that would be made. And so halfway through filming, it was like 3 months later, I said, well, obviously, if it goes on telly. And they went, no, it will go on telly. And I said, well, no, but this is like a sort of, you know, like a student thing, isn't it? Like you're, because they're all young as well. I thought, I imagine there'd be, you know, like a sort of showman's wagon and catering star. I'd seen films and I thought, oh, that's what it would be like if it was proper telly. And then I realized that they said, no, we'll, none of us will work again if this doesn't go on air. I thought, really? Mm. So then I realized that the world of television is actually quite small.
Yeah, it changed dramatically. Went from people turning up with, well, in my day, there used to be, you turn up to film something, there'd be loads of people. And then eventually it was just one person.
Yes.
And the cameras
survivor of the fittest.
The cameras got smaller and smaller. So I think it was last year or, yeah, I think it was the beginning of last year, I ended up doing a pilot where they recorded it on iPhones.
Yeah, you see, that's...
kind of really freaked me out.
Yeah, and that's like, difficult to get your head around.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the technology's fantastic, isn't it? As long as people can see and hear what's happening, then that's all that matters. So you did that, it's very successful. Did that help your other business then? Did it help your property business?
No, probably not, actually. Probably it didn't, because then you're no longer anonymous, and that was easier before. Yeah. But it was an amazing experience, and I kind of think, actually, the things that I was young at the time, and I it was an adventure that you couldn't turn down an adventure like that, really, because you don't know where it's going to go. And I always think in life you should always take your opportunities, and if you don't take your opportunities, then nothing will happen, and that's your fault, isn't it?
But were you ever worried, because you weren't trained, were you, as such? It was just knowledge you'd built up from actually being a property developer, but you hadn't been...
Building trained.
Yeah, I don't know, or whatever. You worried going on TV that people would disagree with your opinions on stuff?
No. I probably should have worried about it. No, I never worried about that. That's really weird. No, I guess I didn't have a great relationship with education growing up. So I've kind of learnt everything from being on the ground. And I guess I've never been that worried about admitting that I don't know things. It's never bothered me. So actually, I think that's probably, in hindsight, looking back on it, I actually think that's probably why, one of the reasons that property had to work for so long, is that I don't need to pretend that I'm clever, because I don't care if people think I'm not clever. So I'm quite happy to say, I don't understand what you're talking about. That doesn't make any sense. And I like people to explain things to me in a really simple way. So I guess that means that I'm happy to explain to other people. I don't need to dress it up and try and make you look stupid because you don't understand what a RSJ is. I could just say it's a piece of metal that runs from there to there, because it doesn't mean you're stupid that you don't know what an RSJ is. Yeah. It's just that no one told you. So there's something that really annoys me about, you know, the kind of nonsense of using words and terms that people don't understand with the hope that you're going to make yourself look cleverer.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Is it just an equation, a mathematical equation, to do property development? Surely you pick up a property, you're going to flip it, you know what it's going to be worth, you're picking it up, you know if you do it up, you kind of, especially with all the internet these days, Zoopla and things like that, and you can just go on and see what the property's worth, or compare it to the other properties in the street. I'm sure you've always been able to do that.
Do you know, one of the things I have realised in life is that the things you know, you assume everyone else knows.
Yeah.
So that's just knowledge. And then the things you don't know, you're always astounded that people are so clever because they know them and you don't. So there are things that I think are just absolutely perfectly obvious, that people, when I say, oh gosh, that's so obvious, obviously this isn't an area that's going to be up and coming any minute, you can see. And they look at me and go, oh, how do you know? And I say, oh, it's obvious, you can see. But I realize that it isn't obvious to other people.
So what sort of things would you notice?
It's sort of, you just feel it.
Right.
You can just feel it but you look at it, and I guess it's a combination of thinking architecturally. I really think it's difficult architecturally to change somewhere. So if you've got somewhere that architecturally has potential, then even if it's really run down, it will become an area that people want to live in, an afferent area. I really worry about the size of our rivers what we've done in London, because I kind of think, you know, the principle of property, I think, is that you really need independent people to own independent buildings. You want to have a variation in shops and in how people live and what they do to buildings means that you have a proper community. You can't invent a community. A community happens without, you can't kind of fly a community into an area. You have to let a community evolve, because a community is built up of different people and different people's ideas. So when you have a development, say like Basti Power Station, where, you know, it's no one can own a building there. No, I mean, you can own a lease, but the shop holders are these huge rents, all owned by they're all owned by landlords. So you're never going to get little independent shops there ever. So you'll never have a community, because people will never invest, and you'll never get individual investors in the area. You'll get rich people who buy, you know, £3 million flats, but I kind of think that's all you'll ever have there. And you'll have chains of coffee shops, and it'll never work a community. And so the sort of basic structure of that will never increase in value, in my opinion.
What's gonna happen? So if you invest in those areas, they'll never...
I think it's unlikely you'll see massive increase in value. I mean, let's be honest, they're so expensive anyway, it'd be difficult for them to go up more. Because it doesn't...
What's your thoughts on property in the let's take London, but all the cities, they're going up so much, and young people aren't able to buy properties in them. I mean, can it keep going up?
Well, I think it has plateaued at the top end. Foreign investment means that there's a lot of dead zones at the top because they're not occupied, the flats. I do think actually young people can buy property. It's just, and as young people grow up, it's difficult for them to live near their parents. That's the thing that I think is a bit sad, because if you live, you know, say 30 years ago, you moved into an area of London, your children now couldn't afford to buy there. So that's going to, that means that there's a sort of jump in generations. And that's really sad. I think that they can afford to buy. You just have to accept that you live maybe 15 minutes out of London on a train, but they come every 5 or 6 minutes, the train. So it's not the end of the world. People will be able to afford to buy. But I do think we've got sort of, it really worries me in this country, because not only do we have packing in the southeast, we're not doing anything to stop the packing in the southeast, because actually it's quite a big country.
What does packing mean?
Too many people one area. And we're not really doing anything in terms of planning policy to stop that, because the trouble is, planning policy, the easy thing for government to do is to say, right, we'll build more houses. Totally fine. We're going to flood the market with houses, and then there'll be more houses, just like diamonds. Pour more into the market and they'll be cheaper. Of course, it's a ludicrous thing to say, because you need the infrastructure to work around the houses. So you can't just say, take a, you know, central London and say, right, we're going to build, even if you build all over Hyde Park, it's not going to mean everyone can afford to buy a flat there. So you have to get, it's the infrastructure that really matters. And actually, the country's quite big, and I would like to see much harder diversification around the country, so people, other hubs of other parts of the country were properly invested in, and the communication links made cheaper and faster, so you could get in and out of different parts of the country.
Big investment you're talking about there. What government can afford to do that?
Well, no government wants to. They can't afford it, but B, they won't say it, because it can't happen in 4 years. So it's just easier to say we'll build more houses.
Exactly.
So it's short term.
We don't have long term thoughts.
Which is completely politics, mad, which is why we don't invest in education to keep our prisons empty, because, of course, no one really cares, because it's the government's only in power for 4 years. And, of course, if you're actually educated, if you put more money into education so that everyone was literate, you would have less people in prison. But that takes 16 years to happen, or 14 years. And actually, therefore, no one wants to invest in that. So it's easier to just tick some boxes.
It seems to me, I mean, look, we're talking about something completely different here, but it seems to me that the system doesn't really work, because, as you say, you've only got 4 years. And so during that time, you can't promise long-term solutions.
You're right. And I've gone through stages where I've been quite depressed about this in my life, thinking, hang on, this is, what can we do about this? But then actually, it's my dad that pointed it out. And he said, it might not be good, but it might be better than all the other options.
All the alternatives,
And actually, the other options, it's sort of all right, but it's not great. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, what you want is a benevolent dictator, don't you? But there aren't many of those around.
I could do that job. Vote Tim. How is Airbnb impacting on our cities at the moment? Have you noticed that at all? I understand in Barcelona, they're furious about it because people have bought up Airbnb, bought up properties to rent out as Airbnb type scenarios. And the locals can't afford to live there anymore. And they don't want it as a tourist place. They want it as a place where locals live. Obviously, this is happening in London and every major city. Have you noticed this happening?
Well, it's an interesting one. It's quite a high risk strategy for some. I mean, in terms of investment, I think there's a lot of people doing Airbnb. But I think to be relying on Airbnb as an income for an investment is quite a risky plan.
It's working for people though, isn't it?
It is, but only works. It's a bit like the Uber drivers. It only worked until there weren't enough Uber drivers to mean that you didn't get any work. And so I think it is working for people in some areas, but by next year it might not work because as soon as enough people do it, then there isn't the demand and therefore you don't get the income. Airbnb I think is fantastic. And actually what I love about it is I love anything that's deregulated, I love it. And what I really love about Airbnb is that for a while, there was sort of mental, mad, completely ridiculous people in government and local authority decided that there should be regulations for B&B. So there were all sorts of regulations that were brought in and they employed people in the local authority, gave them a car to drive out to Grandma Miggins, who rented out her spare room. Now her kids had left home for Airbnb. And she had to do food hygiene tests to make sure she knew the difference between chicken and butter and the bin and the oven, and had to fill in lots of forms, of course, which were all printed at vast expense and then stored somewhere once she'd filled them in at vast expense. Then she had to have a separate wash hand basin in the corner, and the dogs had to be quickly moved, so obviously they'd come back in after the person had left.
Yeah.
But now what I'd really like to know is, was there an epidemic of food poisoning cases from B&Bs in this country? I personally think it's unlikely that anyone has ever had food poisoning from some eggs and bacon from Grandma Miggins renting out her spare room. It was just legislation for legislation's sake. So then a lot of people who, it was just quite a nice way for older people to have a bit of an extra income doing B&B, and you know, their kids had left home, they could have a little bit, it would help their pension. It was a really sensible way of allowing people to utilize extra space. And then the legislation stopped it. So now B&B is totally legislated up to the eyeballs, and Airbnb came in and just went, do you know what, just scrap all that. We're just gonna go back to how it was in the first place. So Airbnb is B&B before legislation. And I'm not quite sure why no one's done anything about it, but I'm really glad.
Oh, you've ruined it for everyone now.
While
we're getting political, something else I want to talk about, something which I can't get my head around at all, is this idea that you would own a freehold and then you would do a 99-year lease. You would sell your property to someone for 99 years, and then you're allowed to basically get that property back after 99 years is the way it works out. But obviously, if you're the leaseholder, you keep buying you keep updating the lease you've got, which is legally they have to do it, don't they, once you've bought it?
Yeah, they do now, yeah.
However, it still keeps money coming into someone who bought a freehold years ago. It's not distributing the wealth. It seems like a really backward step for properties in this country. It feels like we should be allowed to say now, if you own the leasehold of that, that's your freehold now. Get on with it.
That's a really interesting one, actually. I think there's lots of things that could be reformed, but that wasn't at the top of my list.
Why? Because you're not going, look, you can buy the leasehold and we will devalue the property because we want to keep it in our family. Which is basically what it is, or in my portfolio. So rather than pay £100,000 to this property, you're going to pay 90 because you're only getting a leasehold. You're still going to pay top dollar. It's just you have to every now and then pay more to increase your leasehold, and you don't actually own the thing. It's ludicrous.
That is true. I do see your point, but let's look at it from the other side. And that is, if you had lots of freehold flats in a building, and we own a flat that's a freehold flat in a building. The problem with that is that you don't have any responsibility to not leak onto the floor below, and the flat above has no responsibility to not leak into your flat. So you then have unless you have collective responsibility somewhere or somehow for the whole building, then you can end up with a leaking roof and leaking gutters and the windows never being painted. So you have a big problem with the actual building itself. So it comes from someone taking responsibility for the whole building. And of course, if you don't, if you say, right, we'll just share it, someone has to organize it.
Okay.
Someone has to arrange it.
All right, I understand that, but there are also houses which are being sold as well in that system.
Are there? I don't know about leasehold houses.
Oh,
there
really?
Probably are, actually. Yes, in central London there are, but that's in real, you are right, that's big old-fashioned landowners who, yeah, that is crazy, actually. That is really true. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, but that tends to be kind of like the really expensive.
Yeah, like, bought up and then, yeah. So there's two different sides of it, I suppose. Yeah. Okay, if you are going to be investing in property, doing up your own house, what sort of things are you looking to do then to maximise?
Well, as a basic general rule, I always think that, I mean, the best way to add value is to add square footage, but that isn't always the case. And someone tweeted me yesterday, actually, and said, if I spend £27,000 doing a 3 meter extension, will it give me £27,000 back? And I was like, well, that is completely impossible to answer. It depends what you're extending into and why, how much better the space works. And yes or no is the answer. So extension, it's all, to me, a home is all about balance. So when you're talking about layout, it's all about balance. So you need to have the right number of bedrooms to bathrooms, the right number of bedrooms to living spaces, the right amount of living space to garden. And that's all related to the area that you're in as well. So everything is related to, relative to something else.
Yeah.
So I guess the most important thing to me is that you need to make sure that the work you do to a high standard. Don't ever think that by sort of throwing paint around a house and having poor wiring and a dodgy roof and windows that are falling out is adding any value. In fact, I'd say it's making it worth less, because actually people they're quite excited by a project.
Yeah.
So either make it perfect, like this house, you know, where you can see, you can just move in and do nothing, or to be honest, just leave it and let somebody else have it as their project.
Whereabouts in the country is good places to invest at the moment? Is like, we talked about London a bit. Still a few areas around here, I suppose, but
yeah, I mean, I'm a bit biased, but I think Hull is an amazing investment. It was a city of culture. It's had a real boost of in terms of its investment, so commercially and in terms of business, it's flying high at the moment, only just flying high in terms of football, but you know, the semantics, it's going to be fine. I think Hull is really worth looking at, because the, you know, it does make sense that it's so affordable. To me, any university town that has any good university town just outside those areas, because I think people will start to stop. I do think people are going to stop moving as much as they have in the past, in terms of in their life, because we've been very mobile for the last, say, 40 years. You know, we moved very transient, you know, we moved to one place, yeah, moved to another. And arguably, someone was saying the other day, and I thought that is a good point, that you know, if we rent, we're much more transient, and that's great, because if you rent a house, you can then go and get a job in, you know, Glasgow or Scotland or wherever. I mean, is in Scotland, but Glasgow or Wales or, you know, wherever, you can just move if you rent. But I think the downside to being really transient is that we have friends and family, and I think we're paying the price for the last 40 years of capitalism in terms of the fact
relationships. When you're in your deathbed, that's all that matters, Sarah.
Totally.
You do answer people on Twitter, and I was looking recently. You've had a few people asking you about Brexit. Should they invest now because of Brexit? Should they buy somewhere? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting, Brexit, isn't it? God, it's such a sort of honeypot of problems. But is it that the right term? It isn't a honeypot, is it?
Yeah, it'll work. Let's go with that.
We'll go with that. Brexit, wow. I wonder if people in the future will study Brexit at university. When they study politics, they'll go, and that was the Brexit affair.
Yeah.
Brexit gate. I actually personally think that people shouldn't be buying a property because of Brexit or selling a property because of Brexit. I think you should be buying or selling a property because that's what you want to do right now. I think to be second guessing the market in the future, you'll, you know, never put your life on hold for things that you can't affect. So I would say get on with it. I actually think we'll probably find with Brexit, if I was a betting person, I would bet that we're not going to see a massive change in the property market and or whole of Brexit. I don't think that much is going to change.
Whoa, but I know a lot of people will be throwing things at their iPhones, their smartphones.
That's true.
They'll be furious with your thoughts on that.
I know. I sort of think human beings are human beings and they're going to carry on doing the things they do. And politics actually follows what we want, doesn't lead it. And we want people to go, you know, we want people from Europe to come and work here and we want to go and live in Europe. And so that will carry on. And there may be some more bits of paper and border controls. But fundamentally, you know, there is going to be a certain amount of that still happening. People want to live in houses. You know, people actually, we think we're so important as human beings. We're on this planet for a nanosecond.
Yeah.
And we come and go and, you know, we're so irrelevant in the big scheme of things. Human beings just continue doing their thing. They get born and they grow up and they have babies or not. And then they die. And that's kind of what happens. And it goes round and round with or without us.
Do estate agents hate you because of your website? You stood up. Was it called Tepelo? What does Tepelo mean?
Oh, do you know, it came from a story my dad told me when we were young, called Tepelo Castle. So it doesn't mean anything.
Oh, okay. So,
but no. Would you know?
So does it explain the concept? You've got rid of estate agents. You go online and you sell your house without paying estate agent fees.
Well, yeah, although actually we're really just an online estate. We are estate agents. So because you pay, the difference is you pay a flat price instead of a commission. So it's cheaper to sell your home, but we don't have shops. So,
right.
So instead of having shops, we charge less. But you have the same service. It's just that it's not based from a shop. So I guess we're just another estate agent really, in some ways, but I'd like to think we offer a better service because a lot of it is all the bits that can be automated are automated, so we can focus on the bits of customer service that matter, and all the there's efficiencies that are put into the system to reduce the price. But do people hate me? Well, I think lots of people hate me anyway. I still love estate agents.
Why do people hate you?
Loads of people do. My children hate me because I'm bossy, but no, I think they. Some will,
yeah.
But actually, I think there's plenty of space for traditional estate agents and online estate agents. There's plenty of space for all of us. And I still speak to traditional estate agents, and there's massive value in them because they know the area really, really well. And you know, that's what you're paying for. Is they know, you know, they know that patch. They know everybody who lives in it, and they know who's bought and sold. So there is a value. So there's a space for them, and there's a space for us.
People do get wound up with you, don't they, on your TV shows and stuff when you start telling them. And I've only just realised why it is, because you start telling them about what they're doing wrong with their house, or don't you? You know, people don't embrace you sometimes.
Yeah.
Your information. And I think it's because it's like telling someone they're a bad parent. But we all believe we're a great homeowner. And we all think we know what we're doing, don't we? And then you come into my house, say, and you go, God, why has he got that lighting like that? I'm really struggling with my lighting, by the way. But
it's very frustrating lighting.
Oh,
it's so frustrating.
But this
is the right solution, just so you know, because ever think that the downlight is not the right solution.
Right.
Anyway, we'll move on to that. Moving on.
Okay. But it's you know, and you start critiquing people's houses, you're basically saying you're a rubbish homeowner, aren't you? Sometimes.
Yeah, and you're, and not only you're saying you're a rubbish homeowner, and you're rubbish is as well what you're sort of saying, but you're not actually saying that. It's just that's what people think you're saying. People take it very personally, but I guess your home is an expression of yourself. And I'm married to an artist, and so he paints pictures, and it's really interesting because you have to. He will take criticism. He's an amazing artist. It's absolutely incredible the stuff he does. But you have to kind of judge how you say, because it's a piece of his soul he's putting onto a canvas.
Yes.
And it's him inside. It's like opening up who he is and how he is onto a page. And in a way, a home is similar. You're opening up who you are. And we don't often open up as human beings, do we? We keep lots of shutters down and we pretend to be things we're not. So I think a criticism of someone's home is often seen as as a criticism of themselves.
And everybody now thinks they're an interior designer because
they do.
We can all pick up a magazine.
And
everybody thinks they're a property developer.
They do.
Everyone thinks they've bought the house in the right place and the right time. And I mean, some of the values my friends are putting on their houses
are mad.
It's incredible that what they think they're getting for it. And it's like, you're not getting that. I'm really, you know, I've never had my house valued because I'm not selling it. So I don't care particularly.
You're so right.
I'm just living in it. So,
so unless you're going to remortgage or you're going to sell, I don't see any, it's not really relevant, is it?
No, I suppose not.
I guess, I think, I always think it was really fun when the market's been rising really fast. I've met people and they've kind of gone, oh God, I bought my house for 120,000. It's now worth 250. And I painted the kitchen yellow and I've got such good taste in the choice of yellow.
Yeah.
It's gone up by like £100,000. And you think, technically, if you hadn't painted the kitchen yellow, it would also have gone up by £100,000. But they like to think it was the incredible choice of yellow, that sunshiny yellow that was the key to the. So I think we're quite vain as all people.
But yeah, well, I mean, I still think there might be a crash in the market because what I can't work out is it used to be three times your earning when I was a young lad in the mortgage industry. It must still be something like that, isn't it? Three times your earnings to get a mortgage.
Three and a half to four, yeah.
All right, 3.5 to 4. The properties in my road are so expensive. You have to have a pretty good job to do it. And I just don't know. So you're obviously adding people's wages together, but it's very hard.
I do think that, and I do agree with that. And we were on a holiday last week, and I met this really nice couple, and they were both doctors, and they're both consultants, and they look terribly young, I have to say. That's the downside to, as I say, being born in 1502. But anyway, they were both about 7 years old. No, they were probably in their 20s or maybe 30s. But they were both consultant doctors, and we were talking about property, and they said that they were struggling to find a house, and I thought, things aren't quite right when you've got two consultant doctors. So one was, you know, incredibly experienced people who are fixing people, and their combined salary meant that they struggled to buy a property near a hospital they were going to work in. And I was like, okay, this isn't right. So I do agree with you. It's not right.
I got a theory. Interest rates are going to go up. Houses are going to crash. It's all going to be miserable.
Rural stuff. Do you know, interest rates going up really would be really bad, but I don't think they're going to, they can allow it because so many more people, I remember 10%.
They always say that. Yeah, I remember all those high interest rates. They happen once. They can happen again. Things are changing.
There's more people though in debt now.
But things change rapidly. Could you believe we were ever going to do Brexit and then it happened? You know, it's like
I did think we were going to do it, but
hold on, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you thought we would do it, leave Europe? No,
there was,
it was only when the vote came along, you thought.
Well, no, it was when it was a long time ago when I thought it doesn't make sense. The thing I couldn't quite get my head around is Brexit, well, the whole concept of Europe whilst Scotland was going for independence. And I was like, people want to be responsible for their own area. It doesn't make, I couldn't understand how, I do think human beings quite like being in their own smaller area.
Okay, right.
And I was thinking, that's so weird, isn't it? That we're looking to devolve Scotland and maybe Wales. And I was like, I don't know what I think. And actually I wasn't a Brexiteer. But it was things that rumbled around my head going, God, that's weird, isn't it? That's...
Yeah.
So I...
Giving away power. People don't want to give away power,
yeah,
do they?
Yeah. So just lots of question marks came in my head. And so I did think... I have to say, I was really shocked when I heard. I did think, oh my goodness. But then I think most people, particularly in London, did think that, because in London, we...
Loads of my friends, I've got friends who voted both ways.
Yeah, so have I.
And I've got family who voted both ways. So,
yeah, and I'm sort of not that surprised because
angry because I don't believe that anyone's stupid on either side, and I don't believe there's mass racism either and all that sort of stuff. I just think people have different opinions.
I actually think it was the wrong question that was asked.
There's always that, yeah.
And I think that's a big issue, is that they asked a question that people wanted to be asked a question, but they weren't asked the question they wanted to be asked. So they just answered the question that they were asked. And I think it was a conceit of politicians to me to ask a question of the population of this country, having absolutely no idea what they were going to do if it came back with one of two answers. Yeah. I was like, really, that is, I mean, to me, I just think, well, you weren't listening, were you? They just simply weren't listening to what people felt beforehand. So they then asked them a question, and they went, oh gosh, oh, look what happened.
Yeah.
I think, well, you clearly really weren't listening at all, because people felt angry and they weren't heard.
Very true. Right. Everyone who comes on this podcast answers the same questions, so I'm going to aim them at you. What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
Well, it's a bit yucky and nauseating, actually, but it would be that positive things happen to positive people. And it's really true. I just know it's true.
Right.
And it's proved time and time again. And also, negative things happen to negative people.
Okay, so what you put out there, you get back. What mistake do people make? Could be maybe doing your job. Could be maybe being a property developer.
being a property developer. I think people make the mistake that they don't have to work hard to get something, because they compare the inside of their life to the outside of someone else's life,
yeah,
and assume it came easily. So they make the mistake of thinking that what happened, where they are now, is somewhere they can get without working really hard on it.
Yeah, you have to put work in if you want to get something. Yeah, more. What's the expression? The more you put in, the more you get out. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
All right. Any life hacks?
Yeah, there's lots. I mean, Aunt Bessie's potatoes is
No.
Shouldn't say that, should I?
You shouldn't do that either. You know, nothing against Aunt Bessie's potatoes, but potatoes are not hard to make.
No, well, no, but they are. Do you know? I have to say, and the roast parsnips are quite good, because I know I've just sworn, haven't I, really? But you know, speed. I think in life, I suppose my life hacks would be, if you can save time on things that don't involve people and spend the time you save being with people, then that would be a good
all about
thing.
Relationships again.
It is, yeah, all about relationships. So peel the potatoes, but not on your
talking
own.
Talking about relationships, isn't your? Did I read this right the other day that your husband's sister is married to your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
That's amazing. Who came? Who was first?
They met about a week before us. So I've been with my husband for 27 years. It's quite a long time. And they met a week before. So yeah. Which
were you introduced through them?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's really repulsive, isn't it? It's actually, it's sort of really embarrassing, because the worst thing about it is we all like each other, which makes it even worse.
Right.
And we all go on holiday together.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah. And have Christmas together. It's actually really nauseating. Yeah. We, unfortunately, yes, that is the case. Which means that he's got four kids and I've got four kids, and they're all really good friends. Actually, to be honest, it's as close as I can get to the Waltons, which was my favourite program growing up.
That's amazing. It's so good. Who got married first?
They got married first, which was really weird, because when they got married, then Graham and I were like, oh God, tomorrow we're going to be sort of related. So we were sort of, he was an usher and I was a bridesmaid. We were like, this is really weird.
All right. Any books you recommend?
Yeah, there's a really good one, which is the Train Set of Terror by Ian Ogilvie, which is brilliant. He was a saint.
I remember. Saint. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's absolutely completely brilliant children's read.
Right.
I think it's weirdly. Do you know, I read it, I found it, and I read it, and read it to my kids, and they were, you know, those books that you probably have found with your kids where you lie on the landing and they're going, no, another chapter, and you think, okay, and you end up staying up really way too late reading another chapter, and it's sort of midnight, you think, I really ought to put them to bed, but you're still reading, and everyone's
Roald Dahl books for me, my kids, they love
them. Oh, do they? Yeah, do they love this? David Walliams?
Well, I haven't read those yet.
Oh, haven't you?
No, are they good?
They're amazing, I have to say. I definitely, The Billionaire Boy is really laugh out loud funny. It's really brilliant.
Okay, I'll give that one a go.
So, yeah. So I think that's a definite read. I haven't read a book for myself for years.
Oh, I read so many at the moment because I'm reading them for this. I do like it. When you've got a book, you're never alone. What is the, what's it like being famous?
Well, I think it's easier being famous than being with famous people. I think being married to a famous person is quite hard, actually. That sounds a really weird thing to say, doesn't it? I don't know. I think it doesn't, to be honest, it doesn't really affect my life because I don't live a very red carpet life.
Yeah.
So, you know, Pizza Express, no one really cares anyway. And I have, you know, if you have a group of friends that don't care what you do for a living, I mean, you know, they care just like I care what they do, but it's, yeah, it doesn't affect our lives that much.
And final question, what is the meaning of life?
Well, it probably is family and friends, isn't it?
I think we sorted that out today, yeah, haven't we? It's about relationships.
It is.
Or it might be my hot tap. What do you think of my hot tap, by the way? We talk about that a lot on the podcast.
Is that one of the ones that has boiling water?
It has, yeah, boiling water, and it has purified cold water out of it. But it's hot water on tap is one of the great inventions.
Do you know, I question.
Have you got one?
I haven't, but I was going to put one in, and I thought, you know, what happens?
Call yourself a property developer and you haven't got a hot tap.
Yeah, but I just think there's
changing.
A health and safety risk.
Where?
But what happens if you accidentally pour boiling water on yourself?
Well, first of all, that can also apply to a kettle.
Well, I know, but it looks like a kettle, not like a tap, doesn't
it?
Oh,
yeah. Well, you so you have to push the button down twice and turn it. So most adults I know can't actually work it. Seriously.
Whereas they can like a kettle.
Mark, who's not here today, every day, could tell me again, press it twice, then turn it. And also it comes out with the air in it, so you can't burn yourself. What happens is I can run my hand under it now. So if you held it there for long enough, you would. But you put it under and you get the shock and move it out and it won't burn you.
Okay, I just have never...
It's got safety features. It was invented in 1970-something. I've done it on the podcast. They're amazing. And the guy who invented it, everyone must have thought it was really stupid. But now, I've got a quicker one. They're just amazing.
I might revisit the concept of it. I did wonder if it was over-engineering, you know, because I've never thought, God, that kettle is just annoying me in the kitchen so much.
Really?
A bit like the keyless car. I never thought sticking the key and turning it in the car really is more hassle than I can deal with. So I wish they'd invent a card where I didn't have to turn the key in the ignition.
You're kidding me. People still stick keys in cars.
It was really fine before. The light switch as well. I think the light switch was fine. That wasn't too much effort. I don't need remote lights. I like the light switch. And I find the kettle falls into the same camp where it's over-engineering for the sake of...
It's life-changing.
You see, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this. Maybe I will revisit.
I'm going to make you a cup of tea straight after this and you're going to see how wonderful it is. Listen, thank you
Great.
So much.
Thank
if people
you.
Want to follow you, where are you on Twitter?
I'm at Sarah Beeny.
Anything else they need to look out for at the moment?
Well, there's Rise Hall, which is our wedding venue up in Yorkshire where we do parties and people can rent it. It's exclusive use, so you rent the whole house out. It's a stately home in Yorkshire, which is exciting. So lots of stuff going on there. I'm up there this weekend and we've got a wedding fair on, so people come and look around for their weddings.
Wonderful. And your podcast, have you got a name for it yet?
No, I should have a name. I'll have one by the end of today.
Yeah, well, you'll just search Sarah Beeny and you'll find it. I'm sure you'll just stick up on iTunes like the rest of us, won't you?
What do you think it should be called? Should it be
no idea.
Home to Home or House to Home? What do you think?
Oh,
Why We Live Where We Live. They're all quite rubbish names. I'll think of a better one.
No, I think you should say, do the thing, you know, it says what it is on the tin. I basically think that so when people see it, they go, oh, right, okay, I'm going to find out why he lives there or why she lives there. I think that's a good idea, something like that.
Then maybe it will be that.
And when will they go out?
In the next... Probably the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay, well, that's fantastic. Have you got more lined up? Can you tell me who else apart from me you've got lined up?
Well, actually, I did tweet Simon Rimmer this morning, so I'm hoping that he's coming up. Yes, got Joe Sugg, which is exciting because that's a whole load of stuff.
YouTuber,
that I don't know much
who doesn't know, yes.
Yeah, he's that's the whole world. I'm quite kind of interested in that because actually he inhabits a world that I don't really inhabit that much.
So
lots of other people coming along.
Fantastic. I was at a wedding with him not so long ago and he just had to spend the whole wedding filming himself.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I just kept looking at him thinking, God, this is hard work for him.
Really, it's really hard work. Like, but he's kind of amazing hours. That he does yeah. it. I'm slightly fascinated in it because it's, as I say, a world yeah. we don't inhabit. I mean, in fact, I must take a photo for Twitter in a minute. But that's the first time I've thought of it. You know, I should have been doing it, you know, kind of.
Excellent. You know. All right. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. If you want to contact me, I'm on Twitter at Tim Lovejoy. You can email me. DearLovejoyPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to us as always. You can rate us 5 stars if you want to. And we're filming this one as well. So if this works out and it looks good, I might stick it on YouTube.
So brilliant. You can lucky YouTube viewers.
And as always, sign off my podcast. Peace and love, Joy. See ya.